answer that, because I really don't know. But I know that my, on the other side of my family now, if we're going to the my mother's side of the family, the Peirce family,
yeah.
So Mr. Andrew G. Peirce, my grandfather, was influential in starting the Wamsutta Mills, and he was in the textile industry in New Bedford all of his life, in many mills. But I don't know about where they started, whether they started in New Bedford or the textile business, but I think it started before New Bedford.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Yes.
Anyway, in the history of Bristol County, it says about William Allen, my great-grandfather, it says, cool, clear-headed, and sagacious, no man stood higher in the confidence esteem of his fellows than William Allen, achieved a handsome fortune for his time, but secured something far better, a reputation for spotless integrity and unblemished honor. And I have here his will.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Written in longhand.
Oh, that's
I'm not going to read to you by any manner of means, because it would take a long while. But I show it to you for what it's worth. And there it is.
With
his signature and everything, and every single thing is mentioned that he owned, or had, or ever had, and he left everything. So absolutely
sheets and blankets and things like that.
Everything,
too.
Including pieces of harness for his horses and everything else. He absolutely spelled out everything. You can see
it's
page after page, all written out in
beautiful
long
writing, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, someday.
Then he unfortunately went blind. I think I'll tell more about that. I think perhaps I can read it, but I can remember it. Yeah. Around 1830, shortly after 1830, the gradual failure of sight obliged him to give up the measure of his business, and in company with one of his daughters, he went to Europe to seek a cure of his threatened blindness. He, however, received no benefit from the advice and treatment of the most eminent foreign oculist, and in a short time, 1858, he became totally blind. Terrible affliction for a man so self-reliant and independent as he had been, so full of activity and so fond of social life.
Well, now, your grandfather, what do you remember and know or read about you? We've been talking about your great-grandfather.
That's right.
Let's go to
my grandfather would be William F. Almy, and I remember nothing about him at all because he died before I was born.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I know nothing about him, really nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He died as a young man.
Yes. He lived here, though. Do you think he lived here?
He lived here in summers. You see, after William Elmer, we've just been talking about, my great-grandfather, went to Boston, became in business in Boston. He lived in Boston all the time, except in the summers, and they only kept this house as a summer house.
I see. Now,
and
that's
they did
an
that,
interesting thing. To
and they did that until until I was almost 21 years old.
Oh.
They moved down with their horses. I can remember that moving now. They'd drive all the horses and all the carriages and everything over the road, and of course the family would go in the trains then.
Yes.
And it was quite a procession that set out from Brookline, Massachusetts, where we lived, to come all the way down here. I think it took them 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, and as I say, they'd move down every summer. And
did they leave a staff here?
The house, as I understand it, was completely closed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the farmer who, the head man who lived just up the where my brother lives now, and what I explained he was the old homestead house,
yes.
Was near enough to see.
Life
was different then.
Yes.
You didn't need everybody, everything locked up and people to see
yes.
things.
Yes.
It was really different.
Yes.
Now, I think it might be well, it wouldn't bore you.
Bore me at all.
Thomas Almy, who was the father of
William who went to...
Mm-hmm. And he was born...
He's the one who he's the son of Christopher,
that's
who
right.
went to England.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And he was born in 1775. And it
a
said,
good date to be born in.
Yes, wasn't it? In in the history of Brown, it says Mr. Almy was a man possessed of good common sense, sound judgment, keen foresight, with all a happy disposition. He had much to do with town affairs and took great pride in the annual gatherings and drills of the state militia. He took pride in a good horse and was always seen on horseback, which recreation he continued to within a short time of his death. Now, there must be something in heredity, because I have been on a horse every day almost of my life that I could, since I was 5 years old, and I'm on a horse every day now that I possibly can, and I'm 75, and I hope to be able to do as well as my ancestor did. But it shows you there must be hereditary in the love of horses.
Yes.
Because we've all loved them. My father loved them, and my daughter, sisters and all of us, and we've always had horses. And I've recently given a stable down here to my daughter Susan, and she has always been devoted to them all of her life, and she, I think, has as many as 30 horses down there now.
Oh, really? That's wonderful. Now, tell about some of the... I've heard from both you and others that some of the horses you've bred here have been very famous nationally and perhaps internationally.
Well, not internationally, but they've done pretty well nationally. You see that painting over there? That's a horse called Hard Banking. And he won the National Hunt Cup, I think it was in 21. And that was a very famous race. It jumped a steeplechase, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a horse called Redbud. And he won the Maryland Hunt Cup, which is the greatest timber steeplechase in this country. It was and still is. And it was the first horse from Massachusetts that ever won the race. And it's one of the very few from Massachusetts that ever has won the race.
Mm.
And we enjoy breeding in a very small way here, horses. And we've been very successful with them.
Dinner ready?
My friend and neighbor who recently passed away a year or so ago, my closest friend, Mr. Bob Tuckerman, just up the road here, up Horse Neck Road, about a mile, he has bred some horses here in Westport too, and very good ones they are. And he has won lots and lots of races, and with the horses that he's bred right here in Westport, and Little Sunswick Farm, the name of this place, has become quite a byword for horses. And it shows you that, never mind Kentucky and Virginia and all the rest of it, if you take care of them, you can breed them just as well here as anywhere.
Yes.
And my wife, Letitia, bred a horse called...
He's
won several races, a lot of races. Unfortunately, they ran him in a claiming race, and he was claimed from us, so she doesn't have him anymore. But he has won a lot of races all the way from here to California. And she has a horse now running, and his name is Hassanak. And Hassanak is the Indian pronunciation of horseneck, which is Horseneck Beach. And we have high hopes for him.
Oh, great. Well, that's marvelous, and your daughter now, with her 30 horses, probably has high hopes for
She has a yearling that she took to the big show at Rockingham Park, where they showed all the yearlings that have been bred in New England, and the colt finished fourth with about 40 colts, which
that's
wasn't
amazing.
Bad at all.
That's amazing.
Beautiful colts. So we hope for... But the hope springs eternal in the heart of a horseman. You know?
Yes, I'm sure it does. Just as it does in a person who breeds dogs or any
that's,
other
that's
kind
right.
of thing.
Absolutely so.
Well, now about... I don't...
is the name of my wife's horse. Is the Indian name for horseneck. And I believe that is supposed to refer... to the big stone house or the big stone meeting place.
What does it, where is this big stone meeting place?
Well, it isn't now, of course. No. But it must have been one, I suppose, in order for Horseneck has just come down from the Indian Hassanack.
I see.
But to give it the name of Hassanack, which is the big stone meeting place,
yes,
there must have been a something there to give it that name, I suppose.
Yes.
This is year, long, long ago. I think somewhere I read about how in the summertime the Indians all congregated at Horseneck Beach and had all kinds of horse races and foot races and clams and had a big time.
So this was really, isn't this, I've heard that this was a summer residence for, that Westport was a, really a summer residence for the Indians, that they didn't not live here in general in the winter.
I've heard that too, and I don't know if it's true or not. I don't see why, because it's so much milder than everywhere else.
Yes.
Even if you're coming from Boston.
Yes, it's
so
much
milder. And you get down within 10 miles, 15 miles of here, you'll have snow. But you get here, and there won't be any snow at all.
No.
That's what enabled us to hunt all winter with our hounds.
I was so amazed. There are people up Horseneck Road here now who have no frost. Who have lots of frost. All their gardens killed and all their flowers killed. And I came here, and because you're so near the water, you're... flowers are in perfect condition.
Why, the roses are all blooming.
Yes.
The zinnias are blooming.
Yes.
All the flowers are blooming. And I picked, I don't know how many tomatoes this morning, right out
Isn't
of the garden.
Isn't that wonderful? Almost everyone else that's further north are all gone.
I didn't realize that. We haven't had any frost at all. Here it is, almost the 5th of November. It's unbelievable.
This is something that I picked up today. I wondered if you knew anything about Indians. I was so fascinated with the fact that the Indians hunted whales too, apparently.
I believe so, yeah.
And that it was considered a ritualistic kind of thing for them to do, and that they prepared for this for a long time, but their whale gear and so on, and their approach to the whale was entirely different. They didn't throw the harpoon. They drove it in. They had a very stout harpoon, which they drove into the whale's body rather than throwing.
I don't know about that. I really don't know much about Indian lore. But I do know that we had a boathouse, which we always... it was attached to our bathing houses down here on the beach. And in that boathouse were two very old boats. And they must have gone back into the early 1800s, I think. They were Lap Street boats, very sturdy. And they had a lot of equipment there. And apparently, they used to go sword fishing right off here. Mm-hmm. Because all the harpoons were there in
yes.
the boathouse. And they all
when you
here.
Say Lap Street... say that again about the boats, because I think I don't know, and many people won't know.
Lap Street?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a Lap Street boat is one that is not smooth. It's like a clapboard house.
I see.
One board over the other.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they always used to build them that way a great deal in the old days, and then they, and it was supposed to be much the best way to build them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would fasten with copper nails.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't rust, you see, in the water.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be the very sturdiest way of building them. And these were two great big boats. In fact, I kind of reconditioned one when I was young, and I used to go offshore out here in it, and it would sail beautifully. But I do think they probably, at some time, used to go way out sword fishing in these boats, in those two boats down there.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other day when I was planning this with you, you told me about what... some people had considered was the only house left after King Philip's War.
Oh, that was over in the on the Cummings place, which, of course, was known as the Richard Almy farm. And that was the farm to the west of the road, which went in the division of the road of Job Almy's sons. He had four sons, and when they divided up their farm, two of them took the west side. And afterwards, that afterwards belonged to this fellow Ben Cummings I told you about.
Yes.
And there was a gambrel roof kind of L on the back of that house, which the house itself was the third, as it says in Mr. Crapo's book, the third of the mansions, as he refers to, that Joe Balmy built. And on the back of this L, this gambrel roof L, was said to be the only house in this part, in these parts, that was left standing after King Philip's War.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the house burned down here about 30 years ago, and the whole thing, so you can't tell anything about it, but it was different than any of
the... Is that that chimney that's left standing?
That's right. The chimney stands there.
Stands there. Mm-hmm. When we drive up the road, we see a chimney.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the chimney.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the house.
Mm-hmm.
There was something else that I had in my mind right now. There's so many things you think of.
Well, I'm thinking now, this room, the dining room is perfectly beautiful. It's next to us here. What was, when, in the old days, was this?
Well, I believe this must have been the kitchen.
That's what I wondered, with this fireplace and all, and the size it is.
You see the old oven there?
Yes.
And I think that this was the original kitchen. I've always thought so, although I know nobody's ever really authenticated it. But
it looks like a kitchen, like the, as if they had little these little spider pots on, and where they pulled the coals
you
out.
You see,
and
yeah,
cook.
And there's the oven to cook the bread in.
Yes.
And of course, we call it the mudroom because we can walk right in from outdoors, and the dogs come in, and everybody comes in, and there it is. Doesn't make any difference how much mud and stuff you bring in, so we call it the mudroom. That's a kind of a custom from Virginia. They always had a mudroom where everybody sat from outdoors, but and you sat in your boots or anything you had on, and the dogs came in, and you had a big fire like this, and it was very comfortable. But afterwards, you see all the kitchen and the serving cell and everything is on the other side, and I thought that was that must have been built afterwards, of course, I think.
Yes. So that the original house was not probably as large as the present one.
Well, I presume not.
No.
Although you can't see, except for the L, where it was ever changed in.
Yes.
But I presume it wasn't. I don't know. Although you realize this house is four stories high.
It is?
Four stories. It has, this one is one, and the second story is all bedrooms, and of course now bathrooms. And the third story is all bedrooms, and the fourth story is an attic.
That's amazing.
Must have been a big house.
It is. That's why Crapo calls it
the mansion
house.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, how
I
many
told
bedrooms
you about
does it have? Do you have any
bedrooms?
Idea?
Bedrooms?
Mm-hmm. I mean, people think of houses in terms of bedrooms. And
not as many as you think. One, two, nine, and that's including servants' quarters. Some of them have been taken and split up and made into bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I suppose it had more originally. But
is this house the way so many houses in built at this time and in this region are, is it lacking in closet space?
Yeah, very much. Although there's a closet in every room.
There is?
Yeah, but some are afterthoughts, I think. They put them in the room, kind of, you know what I mean?
They sort of stick out of a corner.
Yeah, out of a corner, exactly. Mm-hmm. But some, they don't. And then the master bedroom is a great, it's a great big room. You saw the dining room, and it's right over, it's the biggest bedroom. And two very good-sized dressing rooms with it. But
so it was, when it was conceived, it was a thought of as a lovely place to live and a place where people who knew how to live well would live.
I suppose so. I've always thought it was a lovely place to live anyway.
Yes, yes.
I know that I went to war, and I was too young to go in the American Army, so I went into the Royal Flying Corps, and which afterwards became the Royal Air Force, at the age of 17. And as soon as I got out of that English Army, only one place I wanted to go was back here, and I've been here ever since.
Yes. I don't see how you'd bear to go even to Florida as much as you do.
Well,
but of course you have to be businesslike.
But you've got to be businesslike.
Yes.
Things are tough and the taxes are getting terrible, you know.
Yes.
And it's more and more difficult to keep a place like
I
this.
I know.
This
I just don't
place.
See how you really do.
Well, you know, I don't think we do very well.
I think
nothing
you do
like we used to. But
well,
it is. But I love it.
Do you think in the old days that there were grand balls and much social life here that perhaps doesn't exist, that no one can maintain at the present time, or don't you?
Well, when you say here, right here in Dartmouth and Westport,
yes.
I question it, that. But I do think New Bedford was a very gay and very, had all kinds of things. And as you know, the height of the whaling industry, New Bedford was the richest, one of the richest cities per capita in the USA.
Yes.
And they had wonderful things there, and they had wonderful parties. In fact, I can remember some of the great parties traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And they had great tradition in New Bedford. Right here in Westport and Dartmouth, I question.
Well, now you do have. This is a point of difference between some of us who are looking into it. You do have things here in the house which are of the period of the late 17th and early or even mid-18th century, like these Liverpool pictures which are in your dining room, and some of these Staffordshire pieces and so on, which are, and the Lowestoft, which in anyone's book is not poor man's fare.
Well, I'll tell you, Mrs. Giles, it's a wonder to me there's anything left there. There were five of us children.
Yeah.
And there were four of us still living. They all had large families. And they came and helped themselves, this
mm-hmm.
house.
Yes.
Whatever they wanted. And it's a wonder there's anything left at all. Stopped it when I finally took over myself. But for years, I didn't have any more right than anybody else.
No.
And they all just helped themselves, so to speak.
Well, now, these beautiful things that you do have here, did you have to go out because your family all took this and that and the other, which is what my family did from my family's
yeah.
home? Did you have to then buy new things?
Never bought anything. These have been left over. What's here just left.
Left.
And stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if some of the family think that the things that are in the house of Quonset should stay there. They do think that.
Yes.
And like the clock I showed you the other day,
it would be dreadful if it left.
Well, my grandfather in his will stated that he hoped the clock in the dining room at Quonset would always remain there. That was around 1860, I guess, and it has remained there so far ever since, and it's still there.
Well, it's perfect. It's a perfectly beautiful clock. It's a perfectly beautiful house. I'm extremely grateful, and all of Westport is extremely grateful to you for this time you've given. And that's all I can say. Just thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Giles. It's been a great pleasure. I wish we had more time, you know, and things come to you, and I could probably go on forever, like the brook.
Perhaps sometime, if you think of something that we haven't talked about, and you're even in Florida, you might make a little note about it.
I will be glad to.
Thank you.